I've been mishearing this lyric in my head from a Bob Dylan song in the garden. I keep hearing, when they came for him in the garden, did he know? The words are actually, when they came for him in the garden, did they know? As I know perfectly well, having heard the song many times, yet it's my imagined version that haunts me. Did he know? Did Jesus know what would happen? Did he know when he came into Jerusalem? When he had supper with his disciples? When he waited in the Garden of Gethsemane with them around him? Did he know then that he was about to die? Did he know that he would live? Did he know that his teachings over the 2,000 years that followed would inspire people to love and peace? Did he know any of it? When we ride triumphantly into our successes, when our dreams have come true, when all hail us and sing our praises, we don't know what will happen next. When we lie ill and dying, we don't know what will happen next. Every day we lie down and wake up to the darkness of what will this night bring? What will this day bring? The old joke, which I realize is possibly tactless to repeat on April 14th, is that there's nothing certain in this life but death and taxes. But the truth is, there's nothing certain, nothing at all, except uncertainty. Maybe it would be easier to know the plan, or at least to know that there is a plan, if there is one. Jesus, in this regard, well, a different Jesus emerges, depending which gospel you read, depending which passage of the gospel you read. There's the Jesus who confidently states God's plan of salvation to his students. And there's the one who says, just before he dies, my God, why have you forsaken me? Or maybe they're the same person. If we are honest, doubt comes in no matter how confident we are. We plan, we strategize, but life has other plans for us all too often. Later theologians and philosophers would invent certainty, a clockwork universe, where all was foreordained and inevitable, a God who knew all, every jot and tittle, the rising of every mote of dust, the falling of every grain of sand, from before creation to the end of time. That was John Calvin's God. Unitarians and Universalists would rebel against the Calvinist vision. But it wasn't Jesus' God. I mean, he wasn't a Calvinist, he wasn't a Christian. He was a rabbi of the early first century in whose religion the afterlife was the pit, whose God was given to anger and jealousy, affection and caprice. In other words, a very human God. The man who prayed to that God, I think, wouldn't have been rock solid of anything. He couldn't be completely certain what would happen. Instead, for all his faith, which was deep, he had to settle for something more like what we have: guidance and inspiration and a good dose of hope. In the Gospel of John, Jesus tells Pontius Pilate, "For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth." Several weeks back, I was talking about purpose here. You know, knowing one's purpose doesn't mean knowing where things will end up, how things will end. Jesus believed his purpose was to testify to the truth. That's it. That doesn't tell the end of the story. And we too, we feel our way in the dark. We seek out beacons, wise people, philosophical systems. People we can love and people we can trust. We seek truths and revelations. And then the darkness presses upon us when we have moments of realizing that even these beacons are not the clear guides we crave. Sometimes they grow dim. Sometimes they mislead. Or in our craving to know, sometimes we imbue them with more certainty than they actually possess or claim. As Pilate said in response to Jesus, "What is truth?" Now he was mocking. He was flexing his power. But it's still a profound question. How do we know that what we follow as truth is true? That we are not deceiving ourselves? How do we know that our beacon, you know, is warning us away from the rocks instead of us leading us onto them? Like Jesus, much of the time, we move through darkness. Now, this week, in the Christian tradition, it's Holy Week. It's Holiest Week that brings, with Good Friday, the crucifixion of Jesus. With Saturday, Jesus laying in the tomb. This week tells us, be in the darkness. Just be in the darkness. Do not be too eager for certainty or completion. Be in doubt, in questions. Be in confusion and inner conflict, for they too, this tradition tells us, are holy. The writer James Baldwin wrote, "It is perfectly possible, indeed, it is far from uncommon, to go to bed one night or wake up one morning or simply walk through a door one has known all one's life and discover, between inhaling and exhaling, that the self one has sewn together with such effort is all dirty rags, is unusable, is gone. And out of what raw material will one build a self again? The lives of men, and therefore of nations, to an extent literally unimaginable, depend on how vividly this question lives in the mind. Out of what raw material will we build a self again? It is a question which can paralyze the mind, of course. But if the question does not live in the mind, then one is simply condemned to eternal youth, which is a synonym for corruption. That question that Baldwin describes, that is transformation, such as we commit ourselves to in this congregation. It takes place in the dark, like the transformation of a seed from something that outwardly looks like a stone, feels like a stone, to an explosion of life and vitality. It takes place in the soil, in the depths of space, far from the reach of any star, in the womb, in the dark. The writer and painter Etel Adnan, who had a mystical connection to Mount Tam, writes of an encounter with the darkness. "A bird ran into the glass door of my deck and died. I rushed with paper and a pencil to make a drawing, and I realized I couldn't draw death. The record player was playing a Quranic prayer recorded in Tunisia. The lamenting voice of the prophet became a funeral song for the silenced animal. I came in and saw my Ray Bradbury book opened on these lines. Robins will wear their feathery fire, whistling their whims on a low fence wire, and not one will know of the war, not one will care at last when it is done." She says, "Through the long night of the species, we go on somehow blindly. And we give a name to our need for a breakthrough. We call it the angel, or call it art, or call it the mountain. We are in the dark, not without guiding lights, Baldwin and Adnan and Jesus among them, and many, many others. But without ultimate certainty, because they too, our guiding lights, they were wanderers in the dark, even, especially, I think, Jesus. Truths are guides, but their brightness can fade. Maybe a better guide than truth would be what Jess sang to us about today. Love. The kind of love that Jesus taught. The love that does not change when the beloved is unworthy or doesn't love us back. The love that persists always because it is unconditional. Jesus said, as Dan said, the heart of his teaching was to love God with all our mind, heart, soul, and strength, and to love our neighbor. The love of our Creator, whatever, whoever it might be, and the love of our neighbor, whether they're good or bad, known or unknown. Maybe that can be our guide. The love that pours upon us, all of us, the deserving and the undeserving, the wise and the foolish, like rain, like sunshine, like grace. May it be so.